Congress is digging in on a fifth round of aid to try to help Americans make it through the COVID-19 pandemic. Democratic House leaders have a new proposal to federalize the nation's medical supply chain. Meanwhile, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, a Republican, says any new bill must include liability protections from what he calls an avalanche of potential lawsuits against businesses that reopen. Congressman Dan Kildee represents Michigan's 5th District. It includes places like Flint, Bay City, and Saginaw. And he joins us now. Congressman Kildee, welcome back to Stateside.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So Speaker Pelosi decided not to bring congressional members back to D.C. next week due to the threat of COVID-19. We should mention the Senate will be in session. Do you think that the Speaker made the right decision, or is that a call that could have been made earlier?
It probably could have been made earlier. She did that in consultation with the Office of the Attending Physician. And to be clear, the Senate is in not to deal with COVID-19 legislation, but to push through judicial nominations. So I think the Speaker's decision, and I support this, is we will go to Washington. We will be there to take important action regarding the COVID-19 crisis. But until that moment occurs, we can continue to work from home. We have committee sessions from home. I had one yesterday on the Budget Committee. I have one today with the Ways and Means Committee. So we can continue to craft the legislation, but follow the best guidance and set the best example we can by only taking the step of traveling to Washington when important legislation related to COVID-19 is necessary for us to be there. So I think it was the right call.
Well, you're in your fifth term now. How would you say what's happening in this moment ranks among some of the challenges that you've seen so far? Impeachment, the attempt to repeal Obamacare, school shootings, just any number of foreign policy issues?
Well, there's nothing quite like what we're going through right now, because this is a global issue, and it's one that no one can avoid. You know, it's very easy for people to pretend some of these other issues don't exist. And in fact, part of the difficulty that we have in dealing with these other big questions that we face is that it's easy for some policymakers to just pretend they're not there. Not with this.
Well, not even just policymakers. I mean, you represent a relatively diverse part of Michigan, everything from Genesee County and Flint, which has some 1,500 confirmed cases of COVID, to Aranac County, which has barely 20 cases. Right. How do you think about the needs of people in both places?
Well, I think, you know, people are universal in the sense that even up in, you know, the more rural parts of my district where the numbers aren't that great, there's a lot of anxiety and a lot of fear. I think the way people are approaching this, first and foremost, is, at least in Michigan, and certainly in the district I represent, they're looking at this as a healthcare crisis that has an economic consequence, and that we have to be able to manage both. But at the heart of it, they're not distinct issues. So when sometimes, and this maybe is implicit in the question, sometimes people think, well, this is a financial crisis, this is an economic crisis, or it's a healthcare crisis. It's all one and the same. People are dealing with it in different ways. It's affecting different communities in different ways. But I think ultimately, when our backs are against the wall, what do we think about? We think about protecting our families. And I think that's universal.
Yeah. The federal government has committed trillions of dollars to get the nation through the first spike of the outbreak. What budget cuts do you foresee will need to be taken to continue to balance COVID spending with everything else that's going on, defense and social security, or like what programs might be a possibility?
Well, I don't think we'd want to undo anything that's essential to the social safety net, like Social Security, for example, or Medicaid. What we're seeing is the need for that kind of economic and health security is important in dealing with the crisis we're in now. So we wouldn't want to weaken that safety net, leading into what might be the next crisis. But I think we have to be honest and realistic that we are spending money that we don't have. We're having to borrow it in order to spend it. I think we're going to have to take a hard look in the mirror at revenues. You know, there was a massive tax cut put into effect just 3 years ago that cost just about as much as all of the money that we're spending on COVID-19. cost. And I've been a long advocate of thoughtful and I think more critical look at the way we align our national defense. We have a base configuration, a military base configuration that expects the Cold War and World War II and World War I all to be fought simultaneously. I mean, it's ridiculous. We need to think carefully about how to use our precious national defense dollars. And I think there may be some savings there. But, you know, in the moment, in the crisis, we spend what we have to spend to save lives. And then we're going to have to get serious about figuring out how we reconcile all of this.
There are some pretty deep divisions between the House and the Senate about whether and how further spending on stimulus and recovery should go forward. House leaders said no to some liability protections that Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell wanted, just to explain, making sure that cities and counties would not be liable for civil suits claiming that they hadn't done enough to prevent the spread of the virus. Just to play this out, might something like that be important in towns that had a high percentage of, say, water shutoffs and a high number of COVID-19 cases, like maybe Flint?
Yeah, of course, in Flint, we have a moratorium on water shutoffs right now, so we're actually turning people back on. I think there's room for a real serious conversation about how state and local governments should be supported. We are of the view that because so many of these state and local governments are simultaneously having to increase spending to deal with COVID-19 and are seeing huge revenue losses, particularly those municipalities and states that are dependent on sales tax or income tax, there has to be an honest discussion about this. I've been blowing the horn about the need for municipal and state finance reform ever since I've been in Congress. And suddenly all of this is ripped off all of these weaknesses in our systems when we're dealing with this pandemic. So, I think there's reasonable reforms that can be in place, but right now there's a big hole in the boat and we need to plug that hole. Otherwise, the crisis will actually get worse.
You've worked on some huge problems, the response to Flint's water crisis, contamination at the old Wordsmith Air Force Base. The pandemic we're going through right now might stand out even among those. How do you think about what should be done and the limits to how much the federal government can do?
Well, I mean, this is one of those areas where I think the president's framing, while I don't think his response has been very precise, his framing was pretty good, where he says this is a war. This is a wartime president because we're fighting something that is a threat to everything that we find precious, the lives of our families, the economy that we build, the communities that we're a part of. And so there are times when the country has to sort of all rally, and it becomes the patriotic thing to do to recognize that we're going to have to take big and bold action in order to deal with this problem. That's where I think we are. Where I think we're falling short, to be honest with you, is that we're too quickly defaulting to two camps, which is sort of the shut everything down or open everything up camp. And we saw that played out in the protests that took place in Lansing.
Public health or jobs.
Yeah. And the truth of the matter is we ought to be guided by the best available science. The point being that it's not just about the amount of financial resources that we commit to the problem, but how thoughtfully we target the use of those dollars. And so I'm very much biased in favor of a huge increase in testing capacity, in contact tracing, and then isolating those people who need to be isolated because of their situation or because they test positive, and use an approach that doesn't create this false dichotomy of being able to thoughtfully stand up the economy or being able to protect public health. I think there's actually, with the right resource, targeted in the right direction, there's a way to do both in a way that doesn't put either at risk, at any greater risk than unnecessarily so.
We have less than a minute left here. I was just wondering how your uncle is doing. Dale Kildee preceded you in your seat for 20 plus years, and a lot of people remember him fondly. How is he?
He's a great guy. He's 90 years old, and he's doing well. You know, we chat from time to time. He's a cable news watcher, so when he sees me on one of the national networks, I get a call and we talk it over. But he's just been a great teacher for me for so long, and he continues to be a real inspiration. But I'll mention to him that you asked. He'll be happy to hear that.
Congressman Kildee, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Dan Kildee represents Michigan's 5th District.